previously.tv podcast network.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the inaugural episode of The Blotter Presents, the newest member of the Previously.tv podcast network. The Blotter Presents is devoted to discussing and or despairing of and or dragging the best and worst of TV true crime, whether it's present day or that of yesteryear. I'm your desk sergeant in this precinct, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am joined for today's episode by Stephanie Green. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, Sarah.
Stephanie is here to discuss the reboot of a true crime hotel TV classic. I'm speaking, of course, of Cold Case Files. So let's get to it in our first segment, Most Wanted. Once upon a time, when God was a child, there was no Investigation Discovery Channel. There was only Cold Case Files on A&E occasionally on Saturday afternoons, and the solemn intonations of a barn-jacketed Bill Curtis. But the network has now decided that it's a good time to reboot it with Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Not 100 on either the reboot or Danny Glover. Stephanie, were you a Cold Case Files watcher or fan when it was originally on?
No, I wasn't. I don't know if I just missed it because maybe I wasn't. When was it on in the 90s?
Yeah. And it sort of like limped along into the 21st century a little bit. But also Bill Curtis was like on all of these that weren't on networks.
I don't remember seeing it. I probably saw it once or twice if my mom was watching it, but this was new to me, actually. So I'm watching it with fresh eyes.
Ah, okay. So let's start with, I mean, Bill Curtis is sort of like, for people of a certain age, like myself, who do remember the original and also remember when A&E just used to air a super block of like hangover TV, that American Justice, City Confidential, and it was like very soothing, and that was kind of the only true crime that you had until the mid-90s in Investigation Discovery. So Bill Curtis is like, I don't know, you don't want to step to that guy in the hosting department, but that entirely aside, Danny Glover is first of all barely in this, and when he is, he's kind of incomprehensible and not good, in my opinion. Did you enjoy his contributions?
It was just his disembodied voice. They didn't show Danny Glover. I think you just had to either recognize his voice. Maybe there was a little Chiron saying it was Danny Glover. They didn't show him, did they?
No, they didn't show
him. Yeah, he was like, you know, just a voice. And he had sort of a very like Maya Angelou-esque type delivery that I found sort of clashed with the style of the show. Like, I think he took his job very seriously. He had sort of a grave intonation. And I can't remember the last thing I saw Danny Glover in, but has he always talked like that? I mean, he's very slow, and maybe he's trying to pull a Keith Morrison. But
yeah,
I didn't think.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He did seem, I mean, it seemed a little lispy. I should say also that I only watched screeners. I didn't watch the broadcast version.
Same.
So it's possible that the narrator that they ended up using was swapped out for Danny Glover, but I don't think so. I think there was Danny Glover, and then there was this other narrator, which, why do that? I mean, if the only reason they could sort of get it rebooted is that they had someone of Danny Glover's stature, okay.
Right.
But he's also been doing those ads for medication for pseudobulbar affect.
Oh,
which
that's
is like,
right, where you're
I'm
smiling.
I'm an actor, so yeah. When I laugh...
I forgot. That's what his career has come to, huh?
Yeah, it's just not a great association, certainly when it comes to like his narration, which sounded, in my opinion, also a bit gleeful at times.
Interesting. I had a different... different take on that. I'll have to rewatch or re-listen.
Yeah, let's drop a clip in right here of him talking about how Halloween will never be the same.
12-year-old Shauna Howe is leading a Girl Scout party. Her best friend offers to walk her the extra block home. Shauna decides to go alone. It's the last time anyone will see Shauna alive. And it will change Halloween forever.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not like he's not trying. But
no, he's trying. He's definitely trying.
Yeah, he's very trying. But he's, I mean, I don't know why I'm actually spending this much time talking about the Danny Glover aspect of this, because he's the least of the reboot's problems, which is that, like, first of all, when it was first on, like, there was kind of nothing else like it on, as I mentioned. There were a few true crime shows. There was, like, you know, Dateline and 2020 when they dealt with crime. But that was pretty much it. You didn't have a lot to choose from.
Hard Copy?
Yes. Oh, God. Hard Copy. That's right. And what was that? Was that the Fox? Was that on Fox? Or was that?
I don't remember because I was a child. But I definitely watched some Hard Copy. And there was also, there's America's Most Wanted. Let's not forget about that.
Right. True.
And I'm thinking back. Yeah, that's about it, probably.
Yeah, there's another one. There was like a Fox version of Hard Copy, and that did seem to be...
Oh, Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes, of course, Unsolved Mysteries. But, I mean, now, of course, we can come up with a whole list, but I think that's probably the whole
But list. It was a narrower field, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, now just cold case stuff. And, like, Forensic Files absolutely had the cold case, like, sub-genre knocked. Mm-hmm. So now there's so much other stuff to choose from. A lot of it is garbage. But here's the problem. We also now live in an age where everyone has internet in their jeans pocket everywhere they go. So once you hear the name, you're free to Google it, as I did. And the issue is that these aren't current cold cases.
No.
So once
They're not current in that the crimes happened decades ago and they were solved several years ago too, right?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the second episode is the second episode, it was solved slightly more recently,
2012 I think, maybe.
Yeah, but still, that's 5 years.
Yeah.
So the storytelling isn't quite good enough for it to, like, for me to, you know, care about the actual story that as it's unfolding. Like, I'm sure this was a very compelling case if this show had been made in 2002, but it's also not updating old episodes from the original. It's just like
no.
A new one that's like, this was a cold case for a while and now it's not. Like, well, okay, thanks.
It did feel like they were scraping a small amount of kind of detective work content over an hour, or almost an hour, maybe it was 45 minutes, I don't remember, but it felt like thin on the ground in terms of content, and they spent a lot of time on interviewing the victim's family, which is good, you know, like, there's a place for that, but that was pretty much the whole show, and then at the very end, like, in episode one, they're like, I mean, spoiler alert, but I don't, you know, you can Google this.
Yeah, well, yeah, here we are at the problem. There are no spoilers, basically.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, actually, the two sketchiest dudes in town were not actually in jail like we thought they were at the time of the murder. Oops, like, they did it. You know, like, I just felt like there was a lot of red herrings leading up to that and a lot of hand-wringing and sad shots of the victim's family where the show could have been a lot shorter. It could have been, like, a 20-minute episode versus a 40-minute episode or however long it was.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I said in my write-up about the re-premiere at previously.tv that the show does look expensive, especially for relatively an A&E production. Granted, I'm used to watching like 60 Days In on that network, which is, it's all surveillance camera footage and it looks super budge. But
right.
Like, clearly there was effort put into it, but, and I too am also happy to hear from victims' families, but especially when they also know that the crime has been solved, presumably, like, again, this isn't old footage.
Mm-hmm.
So
and there are shows, sorry, go ahead.
They're being asked to act like, it's like they've been pulled out of a reality competition show, and you know how, like, on The Challenge, like, it's a talking head interview, but they're acting like it's present tense and they don't know the outcome.
Or The Bachelor.
except it's a crime that was committed. So yeah, I'm not.
Well, and, The Bachelor.
Yeah, exactly. Fair.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And there are shows, I think, that do the victim family interview a lot better, or at least in a completely different format. But I'm thinking of like The First 48. They spend a lot of time with the victim's families because that's about detectives who are actually trying to solve a crime in real time within the first 48 hours. And they don't. I mean, maybe I can't compare the two shows because there's the formats are so different and the premise is so different, but there's a way to do it that feels not stagey. And this show kind of missed the mark on that, I think.
Well, and The First 48 also had a like little mini sort of spinoff about cold cases, no?
I think it did, yeah.
Or maybe I'm thinking of First 48 Missing Persons, but some of the cases were cold cases, and you're mm-hmm. right, maybe it's not fair to judge because of the format differences, but this just felt a little bit, I don't know, not cynical. Like I don't think they mean any harm, obviously, by remaking the show. And if it were on, it is also still hotel TV, that it's like you go back to the room between the ceremony and the reception and take your heels off and you're like, what's on? There's no Law and Order's on. I guess we'll watch this. It's fine. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it.
But in a, you know, in an age where like everyone has DVRs, like if that's your only lane is to be hotel TV, then I'm just not sure that's good enough, especially in the current hyper competitive true crime environment.
Yeah. Also, I mean, stylistically, I don't know if this bothered you. I mean, it did look expensive in that, well, it did and it didn't. I mean, what bothered me were the shadowy interstitials of like ambulance or like police car lights and then like shadowy figures moving and you didn't know what the hell was going on. They had those like every 5 minutes and I got tired of it because I had to keep adjusting the brightness on my computer. And then also the editing, I think I sent you a screenshot of a picture of a lady who was a family member of one of the victims. And it said like Ed Harriman or something under her name. Like, no, that's not Ed. That's a lady. Like, come on, guys. Like, someone needs to be editing this. So that just bugged me because I'm like, if you're going to spend the money to get Danny Glover, like maybe use that money to hire a editor who can make sure you're not making stupid mistakes like that with your show.
Yeah. Well, and there is something about the way that the pseudo reenactments were shot, which was like in sort of like the deep part of the shot out of mm-hmm. focus and just sort of in semi-darkness. And then occasionally there would be this lens flare.
That bugged me.
Reminded me of Disappeared, which I started watching because of your favorite podcast and mine, Missing More Murray. But that's how they would do literally all the reenactments, to the point where, like, I am old lady, I wear progressive lenses, and I'm like, should I be looking out the top of my glasses or the bottom, or should I just not watch this show? That turned out to be my solution.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't really recommend this show to the listeners. I was sort of excited because it's like, it's always nice to know that there's going to be like whatever TV weekend afternoon wallpaper that I can knit to, but it does seem like there are way better uses for my time. Are you going to keep watching this or no?
Nope.
Okay then.
I get like half an hour of TV a day because I have two small children, so this won't be occupying that slot for me,
no,
unfortunately.
Especially not when it taffy stretched its half hour of worthwhile material to 41 minutes.
Yeah, no thanks.
No good. No parole for you. Speaking of cold cases, that is the name of our second segment in which we talk about TV, true crime properties that are not so recent. And in honor of the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature that the Shoah of OJ coverage, OJ Made in America, won a couple weeks ago, which, of course, nobody was talking about after the Best Picture kerfuffle at the end of the podcast. Yeah. I thought that we could revisit that. Did you watch that when it originally aired?
I did. And in fact, I was on Extra Hot Great with you guys talking about it at the time.
Yes. That's right.
So, but I haven't seen it since. So my, I think that was the summer, right? When it came out?
Yes, it was the summer. I sat down to, I was like, oh, I'll just reread the stuff that I wrote about it. And then I was like, well, maybe I'll just watch the, you know, beginning one and sort of locate myself in it so that we can discuss it on The Blotter Presents. And I wound up rewatching the whole thing.
Whoa. And it's, I mean, like it
took a
and
few
hours.
Days. Yeah. But I just would get, it was, it's built so wonderfully and it's so confident about like putting its central figure, like taking him off stage for 20 or 30 minutes at a time and sort of giving you a broader context about Los Angeles, about the 60s and 70s, about sport and sports heroes that I just couldn't. It's so watchable. I mean, until part four, and then I had to just sort of leave the room. And
yeah, that's it's some rough stuff.
Wait for that part to be over. Did you rewatch any of it before?
I rewatched the first 15 or 20 minutes of the first one.
That was your half hour a day? I think that's well
that
spent.
Was, yeah, I was feeding the baby and I was like, yeah, he could watch this. It's fine. for some reason, whenever I'm sitting in front of the TV, my 3-month old like cranes his neck to see whatever. And the more inappropriate the thing I'm watching, the more he's like desperate to watch it too.
Attaboy.
But I figure he won't remember any of this. So yeah, I rewatched the first part of the first one and I agree it's so watchable. I had trouble turning it off, but I had to because my 2-year-old came home and I don't let her watch screens because I'm that mom. I know, I'm terrible. So
at this particular point in, you know, news American history, that's probably best.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of thrown back into it and they were just getting into the kind of deep context parts of Los Angeles, racial politics of Los Angeles, in the time when OJ was starting off his career. And I was reminded of why this is so good and so smart. I mean, they really do a deep dive into not only the context of OJ as a person and how he was brought up and how he started off, but the social structure surrounding him that sort of like led to OJ being OJ. So yeah, it's very good. I see why it won the Oscar. I get it.
Yeah, me too. I had seen a couple of the other documentary features that were nominated, but I was thrilled that O.J. Made in America won because I hope that it sort of emboldens people who are interested in crime, not just from a not voyeuristic. I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for. Like gory, pulpy, gossipy angle, which no judgment. This is why I read most true crime books. And I was like, yeah. Oh, but that it wasn't afraid to put it in that context and sort of try to draw some conclusions. And then it did take a long time. Like it's a long sit. It's like 8 hours total or something like that. And
yeah,
I think that that's, you know, on OJ, which certainly going into it, I was like, do we have to do this again? Like, I just feel like I know everything that there is to know about it. But that's why I also wanted to talk quickly about another OJ property that came out during the first 30, the original set of 30 for 30s. It's called June 17th, 1994. And that is, of course, the day of the notorious Chase. But that was also like a big day in sports elsewhere. Like the World Cup was kicking off in Chicago. It was Arnold Palmer's last tournament that was not on the senior tour. The Rangers had won the Stanley Cup and there was a huge parade in New York. And everything was...
NBA Finals.
Yeah. Everything was blotted out by this chase. The director does a great job, like just putting together sort of not found footage, but there's no narrator and there's no talking head interviews. It's just TV footage. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear a clip of that right now in which Bob Costas, my birthday mate, struggles to figure out how not to be a total monster in transitioning from O.J. Simpson's flight from justice to basketball. Let's have a listen.
There's no transition. I tried it. It sounds so callous. I think it has to be no choice but to proceed with the coverage of the game.
And we will do that as we'll join Marv Albert and Matt Gukas after these messages. And you have to insert a commercial. You just got to, I don't know when you're going to come to me on camera. Yeah, but I've already said I'm Bob Costas. Let me go back. It's down to a best 2 out of 3 now. Before midnight tonight, somebody will move to the verge of a championship.
So, yeah, had you seen this episode of 30 for 30 before?
No. I should admit that I'm not a sports person per se, actually, at all, which is, you know, I don't have anything against sports. I don't watch sports, never have. My parents are big sports fans. My dad watches like wrestling. My dad watches every sport. And I just, you know, I'm like Alex P. Keaton, like rebelling against his parents by becoming a conservative. That's me becoming like a non-sports person. So I hadn't seen this one. The only other 30 for 30, I think I've seen, I watched the one about the DuPont dude, and then I watched because you told me to watch that one, and it was good. And then I watched the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan one.
I mean, their intersection with crime, it's actually a pretty big overlap Venn diagram wise. So
yeah. Well, that's why I watch them. You know, if there's no crime, I'm not interested. But but this was really good. I really enjoyed this one. And when there was, I watched it on YouTube, and there was a little interview with the director at the beginning. And he said, he was pointing out that there was no narrator to the documentary. And I was thinking, ugh, this might not work. But it does work because as you said, the chase bleeds into everything else and then eventually eclipses it. So you can watch sports coverage of all these other huge events that were taking place, and suddenly everyone's talking about OJ. And then when you intersperse it with the news footage of what was going on with the chase and the eventual arrest, it's it all hangs together, and it tells a really like compelling story about what was going on that day.
The one complaint that I remember having with it the first time I watched it, and you can hear that definitely in the clip that I just played, is that there is a certain Carmina Burana thing happening with the like sawing strings of drama.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a lot, but then I had forgotten that over the footage of like, here's a, you know, happy crowd with waving their flags, and Oprah is welcoming the World Cup
and Bill
to Chicago. And the music's like, doo, 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 doo. And then it cuts to Bill Clinton, who looked about 12. Everyone does. Everyone's
Bob Costas. Oh my God.
I know. Bob Costas.
Baby.
I know. And what's his name? Olbermann.
Oh, with Keith Olbermann. Yeah.
Anything. And everyone just had those hideous, shiny suits and floral ties. Oh, the 90s.
Yep.
So cruel.
It brought me back.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed that one. I always feel okay about recommending 30 for 30s to non-sports caring people, because it's like, these are documentaries about sports for people who don't give a shit about sports, and they do plenty of crime. So, yeah.
And, it was good.
I thought there were two DuPont documentaries, I think, out at about the same time. I think Netflix had the other one, and they're both very good. So I'd recommend either of those as well.
Good.
And if listeners, you've been thinking about sitting down with OJ Made in America, it is available on Hulu. If you feel like you want to not spend 6 or 7 hours with this horrible time in our judicial history, June 17th, 1994 is about 45 minutes and equally good in a different way. So I would recommend that. Speaking of recommendations, Stephanie, before we go, is there anything crimey that you're watching on TV in your half hour a day that you're enjoying, and anything that you'd like to plug for the listeners?
Well, this isn't something that's currently on, but I just found out about the Dwayne Johnson HBO series, Rockin' a Hard Place, that's coming up at the end of the month. It's coming out March 27th. And it's, do you know about this?
Probably. Remind me.
Well, so it's an HBO.
You had me at The Rock, but yes.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So I just heard about it, so I thought I should talk about it in case people aren't aware. It's about the Miami-Dade County Boot Camp Program. So it takes these young offenders and puts them into a boot camp program instead of having them go to jail. And apparently it has this amazing track record and these kids like turn their lives around and whatever, but it's high stakes because if they fail out of the program, then they get locked up and then we all know what happens. So I guess The Rock had some brushes with the law as a young person and he cares a lot and he comes and kind of like doesn't, it's not like your typical scared straight scenario where some guy is like screaming at a bunch of kids. It's like Dwayne Johnson being fatherly and hot and trying to like guide them through their boot camp experience. So it looks really good and I trust it because it's an HBO documentary. So I just feel like it can't be terrible. So that's coming out March 27th for those who have HBO. And then my plug, I've been on maternity leave for like a year. Not really, but it feels like that. But I'll be I'll be rejoining the world soon in the spring in May when I start writing for previously.tv about The Bachelorette season 13.
Yay!
And that'll be, I just did the math, it'll be my fifth season covering The Bachelorette for the site. So
oh my god,
it feels portentous.
Yes, it does. And I'm not, maybe that's good.
Yeah, yes. Let's not think about it too deeply.
Yes, let's definitely not. That will be exciting since this is our first Bachelorette of color. So
yes,
that will be fantastic. You can also read Stephanie Green's thoughts on various true crime podcasts that do and do not suck at the trailing website of this podcast, which is theblotter.com. That's the -blotter.com. And for right now, until we get a proper Extra Hot Great Mantle Twitter account, you can also follow this podcast on Twitter at the -blotter. That's the word blotter, all one word, on Twitter. And next week, I believe we will be talking about Time, the Kalief Browder story with Eve Beatty. So please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever your, you know, Zoom download device of choice. And we will talk to you next time. You can always reach me via email, sarah@previously.tv, or tweet at us or visit our Facebook page at previously.tv. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us on our very first episode.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.